Welcome to Hype, another special, another podcast about Cursed Child, the Harry Potter play that opened in London for previews earlier this month in June. My name is Selena. I'm here with Danya, Kyle, and Katie, who have all been to see the play. So we all know what's going on, which is going to be interesting. As you may know, if you are a listener of Hype, and as you may not know, if you found this podcast through other means, we did release a spoiler-free version of this podcast, or like a spoiler-free discussion where we went into depth about the staging and the acting and what characters we liked and who we didn't, and if we thought the plot was great, without getting into any specifics, to the point where we've had like quite a lot of feedback saying, you know, I'm shocked that I wasn't spoiled by this podcast. So it's pretty cool. It's a pretty good, because we all know what happened. So it was really hard for us to gauge how spoiler free we were. But according to our listeners, we are 100% spoiler free. So you're safe to listen to that one if you don't want spoilers, because this is full of spoilers. So, you know, run for the hills right now, unless you genuinely, either you've seen the play or you genuinely want to know what happens in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. And consider this your warning, you know, back away from the spoilers, or, you know, let's all share the secrets together. Let's put it that way.
It's going to feel so good to basically be at a point where we can just talk.
I feel really dirty right now. Like, I feel like it's so wrong for me. I feel very hashtag wormtaily right now, and we haven't even begun talking about
just
it.
Just embrace the wormtailiness
of it all. Yeah, absolutely. We may as well at this point. You know, we're all wormtails here, basically. So. You've been sufficiently warned now, I think. So before we go into the discussion, just want to remind you of the contact information. As always, if you want to leave us comments on this podcast or any other podcast that we do, Hype is the big entertainment podcast from hypeable.com, which is hypable.com, where you can find all the fandom news that your heart desires, and you can find the links to this podcast. You can leave your comments in this podcast post. You can also find all the old episodes we've done. You can also find us on Twitter at HypeableHype. You can find us on Instagram at HypeableHype. You can email us hype@hypeable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr. That's hypepodcast.tumblr.com. We set it up recently. It's been so much fun interacting with everyone. I have this huge queue of Cursed Child jokes that I want to reblog, that I have to wait to reblog. That's been torture, but it's going to be fun come July 31st. So do check all that stuff out. How are you guys feeling?
Excited.
So excited.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah, I guess excited, but also a little bit nervous because this is the first proper outlet that I've had.
Right.
For talking about Cursed Child, because you guys got to stick around a little bit longer in London, but I had to get home because I had work the next day after we saw part two. Most of when I've been talking about it has been in like little bits and pieces. So I haven't really had an opportunity to sit down with anyone else who's seen it and really, I guess, air everything that I feel without having to restrain myself.
Right.
So this is, I'm excited, but also slightly nervous.
And I will also say for this podcast, just so it's clear, this is kind of like how the play had two parts. This is kind of part two of our podcast. Like all the stage stuff, basically all the good stuff, we have talked about that already. So we're not going to rehash that. This is just going to be about the plot. If you want like information about all the other stuff about the play, then go to that, because you know we all agreed on that episode that we loved everything about the experience except the plot. And obviously there's stuff in the plot that we did like, but we'll get to it. But just if you're wondering like why are they all talking like about bad stuff, it's because we already talked about the good stuff. But you know, I'm pretty sure it won't all be bad anyway, so we'll just have to wait.
And I didn't get to talk about the good stuff.
Didn't get to talk about the good stuff.
I'm still going to gush about Scorpius because I love him to death.
God. Well, the good thing about Scorpius is he's part of the plot, so we still get to gush about him. You know,
It's
kind of like the main thing in the plot.
Pretty much. I mean,
welcome to Scorpius cast. Let's just, you know, put that out there.
It's really Scorpius Malfoy in The Cursed Child, to be honest. It is.
Let's be real. That's absolutely accurate. Actually, I was going to ask you, Kyle, because you did miss our first podcast. So if you do want to give a brief sort of your overall reaction, spoiler free, just, you know, about the experience as a whole, how you found the play.
I think as an experience, it was absolutely fantastic and mesmerizing, and it was probably one of the best shows I've ever seen, mostly due to the fact that I'm like biased and I love Harry Potter, and just seeing a Harry Potter play, I was like, ah, but it felt like a midnight premiere to me all over again, with the energy and the vibes, and then the show itself really captured my attention, and I was enthralled the whole way. Despite the plot elements, I was still very intrigued to see how they'd get along and go to the end. So as a show and everything, I would rate it like an A+, but the story, I would to all the way down to a C- or like a D, like just terrible. But everything, literally everything else except for the plot, was amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, me and Kyle and Katie were all sitting together in the theater, and we definitely had like an equal amount of shared looks of awe and shared looks of like, WTF is going on.
My favorite part was when they did the reveal and you couldn't stop laughing, and people in front of us turned back.
Yeah, they were
so
annoyed.
I know. it was so stupid. We'll get there. But I couldn't believe that was actually a thing that is now we kind of have to consider canon, even though I'm not sure I'm ready for that. We'll get to all of that. So we want to begin with giving you a brief synopsis of what actually the plot of this play. I don't know who wrote this in, but it's not much better than what I had planned, because I started writing the synopsis and then I realized that I had no idea how to begin breaking down this crazy plot. So this is going to be very bad, but we'll get into all the specifics that'll hopefully help elaborate on it. We just want to give you a brief intro, if you haven't yet read spoilers or seen the play, of what is like the overall story here. So Albus Potter, who is the son of Harry Potter, starts Hogwarts at the beginning of the play. He's sorted into Slytherin. He meets Scorpius Malfoy. They become best friends. Rose Granger Weasley, which is something that we'll be talking about too, was friends with Albus before they started school, and as soon as he became friends with Scorpius, she basically like abandoned him for Gryffindor and her new Gryffindor friends, and that was all very disappointing. So Albus and Scorpius sort of bond about the fact they both have daddy issues, and this, I don't know who wrote this, because they're losers, unlike their fathers. It was Katie. Yeah, they both kind of suck at Hogwarts. Like, it's very strange. Like, Scorpius is clever. Like, Scorpius is super intelligent. Albus doesn't really have a lot of skills. Like, we see him sort of failing at magic and dance class and whatever Quidditch. The hell they had him do. Quidditch, yeah. That's what that was.
Well, there was a bit, because from where I was, I could see, like, they had the broomsticks and they were trying to, like, hold them up. And
that bit made sense.
Yeah.
But then there's a part where, like, Albus's wand got stuck to the ground, and
yeah,
that was confusing.
So weird. But yeah, so they are at Hogwarts, and we see them sort of, actually, the play kind of jumps in time, which is sort of your first indicator that this isn't going to be your average Harry Potter story, which obviously takes course over 1 year at Hogwarts. We see them, you know, they're in first year, suddenly they're in second year, suddenly they're in third year. I think they end up being in fourth year. Hold up, there's a party outside my house. Cursed Child, it's amazing. It's the parade is going on outside. So basically what happens is that Albus overhears this conversation between Harry and Amos Diggory, Cedric Diggory's dad, who is grieving his son's death during fourth year, during the Triwizard Tournament. And Albus and Severus sort of figure out that there's actually, surprise, a time-turner in the Ministry of Magic. Hermione is the Minister for Magic, which is the best thing in the world. They steal this time-turner with the help of Amos Diggory's niece, Delphi, who we were all super pissed about was the third member of the trio, or so we thought. We didn't know it was going to get much worse. And then they go back to each of the three Triwizard tournaments. And every time they go, because apparently the new time turner can do that. So they go back to the first task and they change something in the future, which means that when they go back to the future, basically everything is the same, except Rose doesn't exist because Ron and Hermione never got married. And Albus is in Gryffindor. That's right, that's right. So there's like subtle differences, but the universe is basically the same. So they go back again to the second Triwizard Tournament task under the lake, which was a fantastic, beautiful sequence that we didn't get to see in the back row because we couldn't see the top of the stage. So we're swimming around in the tank of, or something.
Literally, then, we had to look at the tech box in order to
see. We could not see any of that. And this time, their way of saving Cedric is basically to make sure that he doesn't get to the final task. So they enchanted him so he had to ride naked on a broomstick of purple feathers. That's it, right? Like one of the most clear memories I have of the play. So they do that. What turns out then is that they go, or Scorpius goes back to the present. It turns out this is the best thing in the world. Cedric Diggory's humiliation made him so mad that he became a Death Eater. He killed Neville Longbottom, which meant that Harry never got to defeat Voldemort in the Battle of Hogwarts, which meant that Harry died, which meant that Voldemort won, which meant that it is Voldemort Day every day. Umbridge is a headmaster. Scorpius is the Scorpion King, and he goes to the Blood Bowl. This is like the best bit of the play, guys.
Voldemort and Valor.
Voldemort and Valor. It's so good. And I don't know why we hate this. This is amazing when I'm retelling it. he goes back again, and he gets Snape's help, who is now best friends with Ron and Hermione, who live in the Shrieking Shack. And there may or may not be some funny business going on between Snape and Hermione.
I'm still bad blocking.
Yeah, I know,
it was so bad.
This is my crackpot theory, guys. It would not be the weirdest thing that happened in this play. Let's get real. So, yeah, he gets help to go back and fix the past again, which means that Albus is now alive and everything is fine and it's normal. Someone else take over from here because it's all getting a little bit fuzzy for me now.
So Delphi manages to go back further in time with the...
Oh yeah, there's a second time turner as well.
There's a second time turner because the first time turner was a prototype.
Yes.
There's a second time turner that allows you to go back in time at a fixed... And it doesn't have like a time limit on there, like the 5-minute rule that's with this prototype time turner. So Delphi takes Albus and Scorpius back to the night that James and Lily died, right? That's where they end up.
No, they also go back to Cedric to tell him that he was loved.
Yeah, that's before they go back.
Yeah.
She gets mad and goes crazy and... Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Of course. She goes crazy and sprouts wings, as you do.
Yeah.
This sounds so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is this the time when we get the big reveal that made me laugh for 10 minutes?
It's a little bit. It's once they go further back.
Right.
So,
okay, so we found out Delphi's evil. Surprise.
Da da da. So then she uses the time turner for one last trip into the past, which takes them to the night that James and Lily died. Mm-hmm. She destroys the time turner, so they're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the present time, Harry, Ginny, Draco, and Hermione, and not Ron. Ron isn't there.
Ron isn't there, guys.
Yeah. Ron is nowhere.
Yeah. They find out, after going to visit Amos, to be like, where are they? What's going on? Mm-hmm. That Delphi Diggory isn't who she says she is. She's
not had a niece.
Yeah. So they go to where she's been staying to see if they can find out any information about her. When they're there, they realize that there are secret messages written all over the wall.
Which looked amazing. Like, credit where credit is due. That was beautiful writing on the walls.
And it was literally written on the walls, guys. So the walls of the theater, it was everywhere. So that was really, really cool. But the writing reveals that there is a second prophecy and that Delphi is not Delphi Diggory. She is the daughter of Voldemort.
Delphi Voldemort! Yay!
Or would she be Delphi Riddle?
Oh, well.
I don't know. Anyway, so... they don't know where in time this, where Albus and Scorpius and Delphi actually are. So when Draco comes with a second time turner and is like, hey, I've got this time turner, we could go and save them. And Harry's like, we don't know where they are, shut up. So we can't use it. Though that scene was amazing between just the two of them. I loved that scene. Albus and Scorpius realize that they need to send a message into the future, which they do via a blanket that Harry had tried to give to Albus earlier in the play, but Albus was like, so you give James the invisibility cloak, you give Lily, like, fairy wings, and you give me this ratty old blanket, like, F you! kind of thing. But what happened was when that argument was happening, he spilt love potion on it, and he realizes that it reacts with certain things.
Yeah, because Ron gave him a love potion, because Ron has such luck with love potions.
Yeah, I know. Don't even think too hard about it. So, they write a message on the blanket with something that reacts with the love potion, so that when the love potion is spilled on it, and when Harry inevitably goes back to the room to get the blanket because he likes to hold it on the night that his parents died, because it was the blanket that he was wrapped in.
I'm sorry, it's that funny. When
I know, this is like, it's like,
this is the least bad bit.
Yeah. He sees the message from Albus and Scorpius being like, help! We're back in the past, and this is where we are.
Mm-hmm. And this was a really funny bit, by the way, can I just say, with Ginny and Harry trying to work out what it said.
What it
and they
said.
Were like, hello?
So, they use the time turner, they go back into the past to the night that James and Lily died. They find Albus and Scorpius, and they realize that she's not there to kill Harry. She's there to warn Voldemort so that he never tries to kill Harry, so that prophecy doesn't get enacted.
Right, so Voldemort never lost his power is what she's trying to achieve.
Yeah. Voldemort isn't there yet, so they go into the church so that they can try and see when Delphi's going to come along. They need to turn one of them into Voldemort so that they can trick her.
Makes sense.
So everyone kind of, like, argues a little bit over who should be Voldemort. Ginny is like, I should be Voldemort because I know what it was like to be
possessed
by him.
And you know what? She was right.
She was absolutely
I was rooting for Ginny in that scene.
But Harry also had a point in that he was like, well, Voldemort was also a part of me. Like, part of his soul was inside me, and also I can speak parcel tongue. So
yeah, well, everyone. Ron can speak parcel tongue. That's no excuse. That's stupid.
They transfigure Harry into Voldemort, and it takes, like, all of them to do it.
Mm-hmm, of course.
It just gets more and more ridiculous.
Then, just sum it up from there.
Yeah, as they're talking, Delphi reveals that she is the daughter of Bellatrix Lestrange and Voldemort.
Yes.
This is the part where Selena started laughing.
Oh my god, guys.
Yeah. Everything goes wrong. A massive fight ensues. It basically turns out they managed to capture her. Voldemort arrives. He kills Lily and James, and they have to watch as it happens, which actually was kind of horrific to have to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Then they use the time turner to go back to the future.
yes, that is what the story is ripped off.
Harry and Albus have a really touching talk, and the play ends.
Yep.
Basically.
Yep. You know what's so funny? What was amazing, by the way? Well done. Well done, Dunya.
Ooh. Yeah.
what is amazing is you just imagine these people breaking this, like, in a room, sitting next to each other, looking each other in the eyes and going, this is a really good idea. Then we're going to send them back in time. They're going to have a love potion and a blanket, and it's going to be great. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, it sounded really ridiculous as I was saying it. I'm like, yeah. They're going, I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth right now.
When I told Mitch about it, mm-hmm. it was like, please, like, you're screwing with me. Like, you're not telling me the real plot. Like stop joking around and tell me the real plot.
Yeah, that's what everyone thinks. Like, there's this huge conspiracy on Tumblr that it's all made up because it's so ridiculous that people are like... But again, I mean, and that's the thing, is that people are saying, oh, well, you can't judge the plot. You have to watch the play to get the full experience. And the counter-argument is, yeah, but a lot of people are not going to be able to. A lot of people are just going to read the script and they just want to know what happens. And what happens is ludicrous.
That's being kind as well.
Right. is not congruous with Harry Potter canon in a lot of ways. Let's just get that out of the way. It's trope upon trope upon trope. There's a lot of good character stuff that we're going to get into. There's some less good character stuff too. I'm sure that fans will find stuff to get excited about in the script. But it's really hard for me to imagine that this is going to set well with Harry Potter fans, because it feels so not like a Harry Potter story. It feels like
Fans that come out of it and that are on Twitter and they're like, oh my gosh, that was amazing. Yeah. Like, so good. And I'm like, I'm honestly wondering if they're just jaded by the fact that it's like a Harry Potter experience and they're just like, ah, it was great. Like, anything Harry Potter will do, and they're just like not very critical thinking.
There's a lot of reasons you can choose to enjoy this play, especially if you haven't read a lot of fan fiction, if you haven't been in the Harry Potter community for very long, you know, if you're used to a different kind of experience, maybe you won't think so much about whether this is canon compliant. Because I'm also thinking, like, let's be real, a lot of people came into Harry Potter with the movies. Like, the books are nice. I'm sure people enjoy them. But if they have a different experience of the Harry Potter story overall, I'm sure that the acting and the stage play and the sweet emotional moments between the characters, getting to see Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Ginny older, getting to see Scorpius and Albus, just all of those things coming together, means that they're not coming away thinking, did I really just watch like 5 hours of them revisiting Goblet of Fire? You know, like, I feel like it's easy for people to come in with that sort of more lenient perspective and focus on the good things, especially when all of that magic is happening literally right in front of your eyes. But I think there's going to be a big segment of Harry Potter fans, especially those that have been there, that remember the excitement of waiting for the next book to come out and analyzing every single tiny thing in these books for clues about what's going to happen next. It's going to look at the plot of this play and be like, what is this? You know? Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. I'm one of those fans that I'm just like sitting here and going, what is this? Mm-hmm. What just
happened?
And
you do feel let down, and I think that's okay. Like, I do think, I see all these people saying, you know, it was amazing, don't listen to the haters, like, but and that's great. I mean, I'm glad that people enjoy it, but I think we are also entitled to be like, look, we devoted a huge portion of our lives to Harry Potter, and this is what they're billing as the 8th story. I know Joe didn't write it, but it's still being called the 8th story. It still says J.K. Rowling on the thing. You know, I mean, we're allowed to sort of look at this and say, you know what, that's not Harry Potter to me. That's not what I expect from a Harry Potter story.
We're forced to think about, like, to what extent was J.K. Rowling... Either way, she agreed to everything that happened in this play. So it's like, which ideas were hers and which weren't? That's what's hard to distinguish.
Yeah.
And, like, if someone goes to J.K. Rowling with an idea and she goes, okay, yeah, I like it, does that make it canon if it wasn't her idea? If she approves it, is it canon or is it not?
She considers it canon. Like, if she says it's canon, surely it must be canon. But we don't have to accept it. I mean, that's why, you know, I was saying this in the last episode too. Like, you know, we look at the movies and a lot of stuff happens there that isn't canon compliant. But we accept it as Harry Potter. It's just not book Harry Potter. And I think this is the same. You know what I mean? Like, it's extended Harry Potter. Extended universe, like Star Wars, you know, like the Star Wars books. Like,
yeah,
they're all considered
true.
Not canon now because of the new movie.
Yes, they are. They are now considered legends.
Yeah.
So they are legends within the Star Wars universe.
Yes. This is just Legends of Tomorrow. You know. But so anyway, we're going to get into a lot of this specifics. And I moved the discussion around a little bit because I think this makes more sense. So let's begin with the core of the plot, which is time travel. Like, this entire play is based around the idea of the new generation revisiting this book 4, like the Triwizard Tournament of all things, extensively and creating new alternate futures and going back to when Harry Potter's parents were murdered and sort of having this like quote-unquote best of Harry Potter, even though you can debate if it was the best. So first of all, do we think that, I mean, I know the answer to this already, but when we're going into the eighth story following Harry's kids, does it make sense that they just go back and revisit like the past?
No.
Not at all. It makes sense for the past to revisit them, for Delphi to come out of the woodwork and be like, by the way, I'm here, ha ha ha, and not like to make them go in the past and dig it all out again.
Right.
You know, like
rehash it all.
Like, I think I would have been way more okay with the fact that Delphine is Voldemort's daughter if she had been a secret and they didn't have to go back in time and Harry's scar started hurting and like his son was really concerned and decided to do some investigating and like did all this stuff. Like the time travel is what makes it so ridiculous to me.
Well, wasn't the whole point of with J.K. Rowling that she realized that time travel was an issue in right. the story, so she got rid of it?
Yeah.
So why are we doing it now?
Yeah, that's a lot of people's primary concern or criticism of this has been she made this whole thing after Prisoner of Azkaban to say, look, time travel in this universe is too complicated. It's too weird. Like, it's too much. So she basically wrote the time travel time turners out of the story. And having them come back here basically undermining everything we know about time turners, because ultimately, at the end of the day, like, everything that happened in Prisoner of Azkaban could have happened. Like, we don't really know, but we got the sense that it did happen originally. You know what I mean? Like, everything they did, saving Sirius, saving Buckbeak, all that stuff, like, that could already have happened. Everything that happened with them seeing their past selves, you know, like, they interacted with their past selves, kind of-ish, we found out later. Like, all that was so cleverly done. And here they just totally, and the only excuse they have for completely changing the lore is, oh, it was a prototype of a new kind of time turn. Like, no. You know, I mean, it's the cheapest excuse.
It's just so convenient.
It's so convenient. And it's like, and suddenly, it's just, you think about these little things and you shouldn't be thinking about them like, okay, well, they have this new time turner. How do they know how many times to turn it? You know, to get back to exactly the time they want, yeah. You know?
Isn't like, it one turn per hour? No?
Yep. And I guess they changed that around.
They're just then like that. They've gone back like 25 years.
Yeah, like millions and millions of turns in that damn thing. Like, it just, and obviously that's one of the reasons it's a new kind of time turn, and then they can only stay there for like half an hour or something like that, and
five minutes.
That makes yeah. sense. It was a long play, guys. I mean, the thing that sort of upsets me the most, like, aside from the fact that it cheapens this extraordinarily powerful element that was used so well in the books, is that it felt like an excuse to go back to the Harry Potter year that was the most visually compelling on stage. Like, it felt like a choice they'd made solely so they could put the three tasks on stage and that they could structure it around these three tasks. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You could see them plotting it out, going like, okay, so this happens, next task, then Harry's murders. Like, it's, or Harry's parents' murders. It's so formulaic and it's so, like, it's so, like, trite, you know? Like, it just,
that's
it
exactly
felt so
how
by
I've
the books.
It. Yeah, trite.
Mm. So that felt, and also, like, and that's, we were talking about this too, like, me and Kyle, like, especially the idea of, like, they could have gone back to the Battle of Hogwarts, you know? They could have gone back to try to save Tonks and Remus. They could have gone back to try to save Fred. They could have saved Hedwig, guys. This was their chance. They could have tried to save Sirius. There's a lot of things they could have done that would have resonated with fans a lot more than freaking Cedric Diggory. I'm sorry. I know at least one of you is a huge fan, and that's fine. But of all people, you know what I mean? Like, it
no,
just...
yeah, that's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, because especially with, like, for example, the Remus and Tonks idea.
Yeah.
You have that kid. at yep. Hogwarts.
Well, do you, though?
Yeah.
Since he's one of the people we didn't see once.
Yeah, we didn't see him at all. We didn't see Teddy at all, but...
He wasn't even mentioned.
Nope.
No. And he should have been there. He should have. Mm-hmm. So it would have made more emotional sense that Teddy was part of maybe the Potter family and they were all very close together and that... He was almost like a brother to Albus as well, and that when Albus discovers potentially that there is a time turner, that maybe his driving force is that, okay, my relationship with my father isn't amazing, but Teddy never had his father around, or his mm-hmm. mother. Mm-hmm. What if I go back in time to try and give him that?
Right, and I know we're not writing an alternate play here, but that would be no. like that would be amazing. That would be, well, we would still be time travel, and we would still be like, why did that need to happen? But we would have been like, wow, you know, what a way to explore this unfinished business. And I think the thing about Cedric is it was finished business. You know, yeah. it wasn't something that needed revisiting.
But the whole yeah. point of this was that this was Delphi's plan, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's. I think the other, the problem, bigger problem for me was that why. Did it have to be that
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
for it her so to save her father?
Yeah.
Yeah, really, she could have
it's
like
so complicated.
Time traveled on her own.
Could've
or she could have time traveled to like the last Triwizard Tournament event, like and
or
go directly
just
to the main.
Gone back to the night where Harry's parents died.
Yep. Like
right like,
she could have,
yeah, like right
yeah,
from the get-go, yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, let's like She didn't have the time turner. It wasn't in her possession, so she wasn't up to her as to when she can go. Like, she can't just tell them to be like, you need to go to the night your dad almost died.
Well, she could have just gone back on her own. Like, it just...
If
the
she
whole
had stolen the time turner, yeah, but, like, it wasn't in her possession.
But then she could have taken it when...
She
like, could have
lied up
yeah.
until a point, and then...
Yeah. As soon as they had it, she could have just, mm-hmm. yeah, taken it from them.
She could have told them how many times to turn it, since apparently that's, like, something she knows. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It just... You're right. I mean, it's just, you know, we can sit here all day and argue, like, semantics, but it just felt very superfluous, and it felt like it was a nice visual experience, but when you talk about it like this, when you read the synopses, when you're probably going to read about it in the play, it's going to feel very, very arbitrary and very sort
just
of...
felt like just, filling time mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to take yeah. up two parts, because yeah. this could have been done.
Exactly.
It's
so
exactly.
true. Yeah. So that was weird, and I also do want to say, like, on the topic of Cedric, I really felt, and I know this is, like, some people disagree with this, but I really felt like the final bit when, after they've talked about Cedric for the whole play, they go back to the third task, Cedric actually comes out, and he gets to save Albus and Scorpius from Delphi, and he gets to have a little hero moment, and Albus is like, Cedric, before you go, I just want you to know that your father loves you. I'm like, no, oh my god, that's like,
it's
that
so
was
weird.
The worst
I know.
To me. Like, I and felt I, that I, was so stupid. Like, it was
I
so
did love his reaction,
dumb.
Though, because he was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
He's like, all part of the task.
Yeah, I don't know. It was the bit, that bit particularly, where he's just like in the middle of the task and it's like, oh, yeah, your dad really loves
it
you.
It just sort of hammered home how ridiculous the whole Cedric thing was. Like, I just, it felt like a closed chapter of the Harry Potter saga. And considering how many more things happened after Cedric's death, this extreme fixation this play had on him, of all people, just felt extremely misplaced. And that's not to undervalue Cedric or the value of him, but Albus's connection to him being like, oh, Cedric was a spare. I kind of feel like a spare. Let's go save him. Like, it just, and wanting to go back so many years, like yeah. for 25 years or however long it was, to save one character and not think that one, like, this is a butterfly effect, just totally got thrown out the window.
Yeah.
Not think it's going to have any kind of, like, major implications. Like, oh, I don't know, maybe Cedric marries Hermione. Like, you know, it's like, there's so many things could happen.
That, and they completely undermined his character, too, with yeah. this idea that he'd be so humiliated that he turns evil.
Right. That's another
yeah.
thing.
But that's not a canon Cedric that I accept.
Right. No, no, it just, it feels like, when you think about it, the humiliation of riding naked on a purple broomstick because someone made a, like, did a prank on him. It's not gonna turn you into a Death Eater. Like, that's not how that works.
Like, you know, I wonder where the correlation lies. Like, I was embarrassed. I should help Voldemort.
Right. Like, someone, like a Death Eater, it's like a recruitment party, and he's like, have you too been embarrassed by the light side? You know? Like, it just, I don't know. So that's
especially because, like, he doesn't even, like, know necessarily who embarrassed him. It could have been, like, a Death Eater or, like, a Voldemort supporter. Yeah.
Exactly. Or, like, a Beauxbatons student or something.
Yeah.
Should not, yeah. It's just all so weird. Like, I don't even know where to start with this whole thing.
Going back to the idea of the two of them being spares, like, that whole thing is tenuous at best.
Yeah.
That was one thing that made me go, right, okay, you're literally clutching at straws here. Like, are desperately trying to find anything to justify why you're doing this.
Right.
And that's not to say that when they explore the issues between Albus and Harry, that's not fascinating, that their fractured relationship isn't interesting. It is. It's interesting to kind of see how Harry is as a father figure, where he's far more successful with Lily and James's children than he is with Albus. Right. And I don't know, it's the fact that they needed to kind of push it in a really weird direction to justify this centralized plot about going back in time to save Cedric. It all started to fall apart, I guess.
Yeah, already there, and it was like the beginning of the play. It was, Like, and I will say, like, one more thing about that, the whole logic of time travel that I hated so much was that it sort of escalated. Like, every time they went back and changed something, the effect got bigger and bigger. But that is not how, I speak as though it's real, it's not how time travel works. Like, it annoys me when time travel plots feel cheap. You know, like, the thing that informed me first that this play was gonna be not something that I necessarily could accept as a Harry Potter level story was that the first time they go back in time to the first task. And they change, like, they make some comment to Hermione. Hermione sees them. The only thing that happens is Hermione sees them and she gets suspicious of them or something. I don't remember. Something like that. Then they go forward in time and they find out that, one, Albus is in Gryffindor. Two, Hermione and Ron never got married. And so Rose and Hugo, who's that? I don't know. But they were never born, right? Yeah. Everything else is exactly the same. Like, you have two changed elements, but Harry and Albus, they pick up the same conversation they were having before they changed time. That stuff bugs, and I know it sounds like a small thing, but that just ruins all credibility for me, because that is not how that works, especially when you then go to the next time they change time, and they literally change the whole future because Cedric rode on a purple broom with naked, like, you know, like, it doesn't make sense. I hate when stories don't make sense, when they are, you know, when their whole logic relies on this time travel plot.
One thing I will say, though, the effect that they had for when used the time to...
It was so cool.
It's so cool.
It was so amazing. But it was amazing maybe the first three times. And then, like, the next 10 times they used it, you were like, okay. You know?
Right, because they're time traveling way too many times.
Exactly. Like, even that effect to me got tired. But you're right, it was beautiful. The first time we were all, like, blown away. And the second time. So, I mean, I want to talk a little bit, too, about the third or the second time they flash forward, just because I think was amazing in the worst way. So, hashtag Voldemort Day. This is so cool. We were meant to record this yesterday on June 24th, and it's kind of sad and kind of awesome and kind of amazing. So yesterday, of course, very, very sad news. Britain voted itself out of the EU. It was just terrible. Everyone was crying and wondering what horrible future it's going to be. I was like, I have to make a reference to this. Like, I have to say happy Voldemort Day, because it's like, finally we know it's Voldemort Day today, because this is the horrible future. You know, this is the alternate reality where Voldemort won. So I wrote, happy Voldemort Day, la 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 la. I go about my day. I'm looking for, like, I always look for like birthdays and Harry Potter anniversaries and stuff to have something to write about, basically. And then I see that on June 24th, 1995, the third task of the Triwizard Tournament, Cedric dies and Voldemort rises to power again. And I'm like, how? How?
Actually, so that was Voldemort hilarious. Day.
Actually Voldemort Day. Like, it was the weirdest thing in the world. So how about that coincidence? And what it's all about, obviously, is that Scorpius goes forward in time to a time where Voldemort won and Harry died and Albus was never born. And Scorpius, who still is exactly the same, which again, no, that would never happen. Astoria and Draco would not have had a child at this exact moment in time if everything else was different. I'm sorry, I just don't accept it. Anyway, he's Scorpius is like the king of Hogwarts. He's like, Scorpius is the sweetest boy in the world, by the way. This is like very important. But in this future, he's like, he's awful. He's an awful person. And he has like muggles being tortured in the dungeon and there's big Voldemort banners everywhere. And Umbridge comes out and goes, "You're ruining Voldemort Day." And that's been like the best meme on Tumblr since. Like, stop ruining Voldemort Day. It's like the best thing ever. And Scorpius has to decide who he wants to take to the blood bowl. I mean, the good thing about this, and we're going to start to talk about the characters in a second, because that's where a lot of the good stuff comes in. Scorpius on his own. We left part one knowing that Scorpius had arrived in this future where Albus was gone and everyone was gone. He was the only one left. We were so excited.
Yeah, I mean, because that's how it's basically like, it's Voldemort Day, and it's like, oh my god. And then Act 1 ends there. And
the last one, again, the big cliffhanger, Harry Potter's dead.
Yeah, yeah. Which is both good and bad, because it was a cool cliffhanger, but it was kind of cheap, because that was going to be reversed, you know?
That's just it. I don't feel tense or anything, because it's like, obviously this is going to stay, and I'm not sad.
Yeah. Like, it was very strange, but what we did love, and I will say I had this theory. This was when I still had hope that Rose was actually going to be in the play in a significant way. So I was like, okay, this is great, because now Scorpius is going to find out that, like, Albus isn't there, but Ron and Hermione is still going to have their kids, so Rose is going to be there, and Scorpius and Rose are going to save the day. It's going to be amazing. We had one clue earlier in the play that Scorpius liked Rose. So I was like, okay, we'll get into this so much. Oh my god, guys, we're going to be here for like as long as the play was. But so Andrew was like so convinced that Scorpius and Albus was going to be canon. And we're going to get to that in a bit. I was like so set up. But I was like more skeptical. I was like, Joe is not going to do that. Like, you have too much hope in him. But I was like, okay, it's going to be Rose and Scorpius. That's fine. That's okay. They'll have this time to bond. That didn't happen. Instead, nope. Scorpius got to bond with Snape. So Snape is in this he's in this alternate future. He's alive. He's probably one of the only performances that I don't think any of us were particularly fond of.
For me, it was more how he was written as opposed to how he was performed. Right, though right.
I don't want to shade on the actor. Like, I'm sure he's great, but it was just like, it was weird. It was a weird Snape.
It was very weird.
I mean, the whole...
He was too sympathetic.
Yeah.
The whole idea of having Snape in there and excusing everything that he did across all of the books. And I know there are people who are huge fans of Snape and they love him and they love the thing with Lily and all of that. But I have a lot of issues with how Snape dealt with Harry through the whole of the books.
Oh, yeah, me too, like, yeah.
The verbal abuse that he suffered and rampant bullying, regardless of what Snape felt, that is a child under your care. But the fact that this whole bit that was happening in the play was basically like, you've got to forgive him. Everyone has to forgive him. He's a really great guy, 2 thumbs up. And I was like my skin was literally crawling. I was going, don't tell me how to think about Severus Snape.
And that's exactly what it was. Was there that conversation with Harry and Dumbledore and it was they're trying to justify everything he was doing? I thought, no! Tell me that that's okay.
Well, yeah, but I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, that was one of the things. And then obviously, like, so to sort of add insult to injury, obviously Scorpius convinces him in a nice, again, Scorpius made everything better in a very nice scene. He convinced him that he was on the right side, and Snape takes him to the Shrieking Shack where Hermione lives. And it turns out that, like, Dumbledore's army basically is all that's left is Snape, Hermione, and Ron, who are, like, BFFs. That's the new trio all along, guys. And they basically help Scorpius get back to the past, you know, to fix it all again. And sort of miraculously, you know, Albus is there. And you know, that was, like, when my hope finally died, because they had, like, a moment where I was like, it's happening! And it didn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, and everything is sort of fine from there, which is, it was a very interesting look at an alternate future. And actually, I will say it was cool to see a world in which Voldemort won. This, I mean, we've talked a lot about how this was a lot of fan service, and I feel like they sort of hit on all the big fan service tropes. Like, obviously Harry going back to visit his parents dying was, like, a huge theory before Deathly Hallows, and an alternate reality where Voldemort won is, like, one of the biggest fanfic tropes, along with Voldemort having a daughter and all that stuff. So
is Hermione and Snape a fan service thing too?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Are you kidding? Hermione and Draco too was in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got my issue to that one.
Draco, yeah. And Ginny is another one.
Yep, for sure. I mean, Draco and Harry, didn't they hug at one point, or am I making that up? At least they had a anyway.
They had some great moves.
Regardless. They did. Oh, they did.
Yeah.
Fanfic Draco was amazing. I loved it. I mean, yeah. And so we've got a few things to get through here before we get into talking about the characters. So speeding along. Sorry, guys. There's so much to get through. This was a 5-hour play. So, you know, let's talk about the thing. The girl who must not be named. I want to tell a little funny story about, I think, all of us, which when we watched part one, especially me and Katie, I think, we watched part one, we were like, oh my God, Delphi is the worst. Like, this is, like, the worst character. She was, like, a mix between, like, Luna and Tonks, but in a bad way. Like, it was really, like, weird. Her.
We,
like,
don't know why.
Mm-hmm. Like me and
then Jean, I think...
Me and Danya were talking about how she was, like, this manic pixie dream girl, she was basically there, like, obviously, I mean, I know we have Hermione, it was fantastic, she was such, like, oh, Hermione, all the love to Hermione, but we also had this potentially amazing black female main character in Rose, and they basically sidelined her for Delphi, who was this white, you know, whatever girl. We were so mad about that. So we were like, this is ridiculous. Like, the only thing that can save it is if she's evil. That's what we said.
Yeah.
So careful what you wish for, guys. Because then it turned out not only was she evil, but she was a freaking child of Voldemort. And what words?
We were wishing back for part one.
Yeah, we were. Could you imagine? Like, that, we actually thought that would have been better than this. Because, and obviously, you know what? I did find out, and Andrew's talked about this a lot on MuggleCast too, that there was actually some people that predicted that Voldemort had a child before this play because of some comments made by Bellatrix. The whole idea of her speaking to him like a lover and some things she said about her devotion to him. That's all fine, but... Can we all just sort of agree that the idea of Voldemort fathering a child is fundamentally ridiculous and impossible and wrong and cheap and a Star Wars ripoff and everything you can imagine?
It's so weird. It's incredibly, like, weird. I mean, I couldn't take it seriously because I started thinking about, like, the How I Met Your Mother kind of a bang, bang, oh, bang, 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 bang.
You know.
Yep. I mean, that is sort of a main, a main issue is just, you know, because we know these characters so well. We've read the book so many times. We understand how these characters work. The guy doesn't have a nose. He's not going to be able to produce a child. And even if he did,
Selena, I don't know if you know this. You don't need a nose to produce a child.
Wait, hold on a second. No. I just mean he's not human anymore. That's what I meant. I meant he's like, he's not human enough to produce a child. Like, I really believe this. And even if he was, I don't believe he would have made himself vulnerable to anyone in that way. I don't believe he would have wanted
love. I mean, just because he has sex doesn't mean he makes himself vulnerable.
That kind of intimacy with another person, like, I don't think he would have had any kind of desire for that. I don't think he would want to bring something into this world that could potentially one day rise up against him. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, his whole thing was that he wanted to, like, be eternal.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to live forever. Why does he need a child to carry on his legacy when his whole plan was to be alive forever and rule the world?
Well, I mean, at the Battle of at the point where it supposedly happened, it was the Battle of Hogwarts, and Harry and Dumbledore had already destroyed a fair amount of Horcruxes, and he was probably just like, well, crap. Okay. So.
But no, I mean, she was supposed to. I mean, if this timeline worked out, Bellatrix would have been pregnant during Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, didn't they say that she. Was it that she gave birth in Malfoy Manor just before the battle?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the thing is that the idea that Voldemort fathered a child during the last couple of years of his quote-unquote life, when it cheapens everything. Not only because the whole secret daughter thing is the most ridiculous trope in the history of tropes, but also just because of what it does to Voldemort. Like, I feel like there's no, like, it's just such a cheap shock thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's just, there's nothing about this that feels like it's earned. And that feels like you know, you think of all the good stories out there that are being written all the time that don't get a fraction of the attention of this. And then you see Cursed Child just being used for these ridiculous tropes. And I feel really sort of, like, so disappointed and like, so ashamed that this is what Harry Potter has come to. You know what I mean? Like,
it's just this so is, like, easy.
The low of the low. Yeah.
It's so easy that the new villain of the story is an offspring of the two biggest villains. Like,
and it also just goes to show that, like, they didn't have a new story. There literally was no new story left.
No.
Like, it's just they had to go back and just reuse all of the old stuff. You know, and that's what I said. I said it would have been amazing if Delphi had just thought she was the daughter of Voldemort. Like, that's what I was expecting.
That she's crazy.
Save it. Yeah, like, she was crazy and that she'd imagined herself as this big descendant of evil, where really she was just crazy, you know?
Which in itself also is another, like, overused trope, but still. Well, better than this.
It was better.
I didn't realize that people could fly, like, normally, with wings.
It's funny that people are sort of taking such issue with this, because I just assumed, like, if you can transform yourself into Voldemort, surely you can transform wings on yourself. Or maybe, because the whole Audrey thing, like, that's the whole thing, is that I sort of posted on Hyperbole that the Audrey, which is what she called herself in the alternate universe, and her wings are that of an Audrey, is also a creature that's going to appear in Fantastic Beasts. Maybe that's just her Patronus form. No, Animagus form, sorry. Like, you know, I feel like there's sort of a lot of ways to get through. Like, that wasn't the thing that bothered me most.
Okay, but listen, I was freaked out at the wings long before the Audrey or whatever showed up, because Harry was like, oh yeah, I gave your sister pixie wings. Like, what kind of, what is that, what?
Yeah, I didn't know what that meant. Were, like, they just, like, plastic wings, like, or are they real wings?
Like, I was like, did you give her, like, toy wings to play with that make
her
actually fly?
Thought. Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, that wouldn't be weird in this world.
Well, it's just weird because, sorry, it's just, it happens, like, we haven't really heard or seen or, like, proven any evidence that people can grow wings in this universe, and then in this play, two people have wings. I'm like, okay.
I don't know if that's, like, you know, it's because I remember, you know, in the Harry Potter books, like, there were so many accounts of, like, accidental partial transfiguration that happened to people. You know, I don't know if anyone ever grew wings, but I'm sure they grew, like, you know, like Hagrid accidentally put a pigtail on Dudley. You know, if you can do that, then you can grow, you can put wings on yourself, surely. You know, like, that doesn't, to me, that doesn't seem very far-fetched.
Yeah, no.
But I do think, like, it's if we're to believe that she was born with wings, That would be a different story. I didn't read it that way.
As this keeps going on and on and on and on, and I'm just thinking about how ridiculous this is. In my head, all I'm thinking is, this sounds like a novel that Rita Skeeter would have written.
Yeah, yeah. It just sounds like this. It sounds like we're trying to have a real serious discussion about this really adolescent. Someone tries to write a new Harry Potter story.
Maybe the joke's on us, and then like when the script will come out, it says written by Rita Skeeter.
Yeah, or like I'm theorizing it's a totally different script. And she's like, ha, 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 I forced you to keep the secrets. So yeah, it's actually funny because we did have a question from Cassandra that goes, do they try and account for a human being growing wings, as that has never been seen before in this universe? Again, like, I point back to the pigtail and say with the tail of the pig and say that's probably what it was, but who knows?
I think it's just when you get so critical about this because there are already so many other points to criticize.
Yeah.
The little things start to get you and you're like, okay, calm down.
Yeah, definitely true. So I have a big question about this because we've talked about this. I have seen people say, oh, I guess it's canon compliant because Bellatrix made that one reference in one of the books. But people seem to very universally consider this the most ridiculous thing in the history of time. So my question is, when the script book comes out, do you think Harry Potter readers as a whole will accept this? And will they forgive this is maybe the bigger question. Because I feel like this is the biggest faux pas of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very difficult for Harry Potter fans. I think it's going to be a very trying time, especially for a lot of us that have spent so much time in fandom, reading fanfic, writing it, drawing fan art, theorizing, and still, even after the books have ended, still discussing it, like, considering what might have come next. You know, there's so much out there. There's so much fanfic that's out there about the later years, like what mm-hmm. came next. And I think that this is so far and away from what anyone could have imagined, mm-hmm. and not in a good way, that it's going to be a very trying time for people who engage with the material on a deeper level. Because I think this is so... it's so trope heavy, yeah. and it's so simplistic, mm-hmm. and there's no nuance to it at all, that it's going to be very difficult to reconcile this as a Harry Potter story, that it's going to be a very trying and telling time for fandom, how we make it through this.
Yeah, and I agree, and I think you're right, and I think that's why we're sort of no holds barred in this discussion, because I think we're right to be disappointed. I think we're right to sort of pick this apart and go, if you're going to call this an eighth story, we're going to treat it like an eighth story. You know, you didn't have to do that. You could have called it a Harry Potter experience. You could have said based on J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter. You didn't have to say J.K. Rowling's Cursed Child. Like, there's so many ways that you could frame this that wouldn't get the hopes up for the Harry Potter fandom. This is the eighth story. It would be different if the news outlets were calling it the eighth story. No, the official people. Joe is saying this is canon. Joe is saying hashtag keep the secrets, protecting this great plot as though it's this great masterpiece when we're looking at this.
Maybe going, she's asking us to keep the secrets because she doesn't want anything. Well,
that's the theory. That's the theory, right? You know? That feeds into her calling out Hyperbole to point them to us because we only posted the nice things. There's just these things, the plot overall, this twist, some of the stuff that happened, it's hard. I feel like Harry Potter is over now, and that doesn't mean we won't always have the books and stuff, but this just proves like they can't add anything. The only thing they can do is detract at this point. I'm not saying Fantastic Beasts won't be good. I'm just saying I feel like I'm done. You know, like this was the last straw for me. I'm done with Harry Potter, except for what we already have.
So do you feel a bit of like a mistrust of Jo now? Because it's, you know, we always said, oh, well,
yeah.
She only does things that she really believes in and she doesn't do things that are really dumb. And then it's like her name's attached to this in some capacity and we hate it.
Right. I feel like, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of people going to like it, and I'm sure that Jo is proud of it and it's beautiful and I understand and the acting is amazing and etc. But in terms of the story, it just, you know, it just doesn't, it just could have been so much better. I'm, I, yeah, I don't know what else to say.
I feel if her name wasn't attached to it, I'd feel totally different.
Me too. I would have enjoyed the heck out of it because I would have been like, oh my God, it's big screen fanfic. Like, how cool
it's like,
is that?
It's ridiculous, but I'll run with it because whatever, it's fun. But if it's supposed to be taken this seriously as an eighth story, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel as well. The fact that we're meant to accept this as the true future of the trio and what happened after the Battle of Hogwarts, that for me is what makes me harder on this, rather than it being something akin to the Harry Potter story as like a Harry Potter musical was. A Harry Potter musical was amazing, you know, and really fun and ridiculous, and all of the characters in that were heightened and they were over the top and they were exaggerated and it worked. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that if this was treated in the same way as that, in that this isn't like canon official Harry Potter, this would have been far more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. But yeah,
because we're told that we need to treat this in the same way as we would critically treat one of the books, I guess we're a little harder on it because we would expect it to be at the same quality as the books.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
See, I'm fine with it. I kidding, like right? No, I'm not. Oh, like, it's I agree with all the points, and I think it's a ridiculous thing, and I think it's weird that this is considered canon. But like, it's not like it's your last straw, but it's not mine. And it's made me even more excited for Fantastic Beasts.
Okay.
Because I'm just
more power to you.
Okay.
You know, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, maybe it's just my overly positive attitude, which gets in the way of critically thinking a lot, but it's so intriguing to me. I'm so interested in the whys and like the choices that she made, and like I don't have to accept them to be interested and to like.
Okay, but like, there's literally things that contradict what happens in the books. You know, it literally undermines the reality of the book series, and that's what gets me. I'm like, oh, it just makes everything feel less real. And I'm just, with Pottermore, with everything, I'm just like, I'm not ready for this world to not be real for me.
Maybe it's because I see it as a level under the books. And I feel like it's not, it's like,
right.
No.
Well, it's fair.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I see them on two completely different levels. And I see, like, the books for me are like, the things that she worked like years and years and years upon, and like she spent all this time organizing and trying to get all the timing right and the plot right, and like we're still figuring out things in the plot that like on book one that lead to book seven, and it's so intricate, and that's on a whole other level. And this is more like the fun stuff that she did for fun that she isn't really necessarily putting in all the effort and all the work into, because I feel like if she put in years upon years upon years into this just one story, it would be much more refined. It would be way different. And I think that this is like her fun project. This is like this her son fun side project. Like
this
like,
is her okay. son.
I'm gonna make a comparison right now, and I don't know how accurate it is, but it's gonna be like Stephanie Meyer's Twilight versus Stephanie Meyer's Midnight Sun. Whereas Midnight Sun wasn't anything that she had planned to do, and she just kind of
I cannot
did
believe
it.
You just converted it to Twilight.
I mean,
he's not the first person. Andrew did it as well.
Yeah.
Oh, but well, if Andrew did it.
If you think about it, it's right, because it's like it's her side project that she liked and she had fun with and she wants to proceed as canon, but it isn't anything that she nearly worked hard enough on to make us think that it's as legitimate. So, like, she can, say it's canon all she wants, but I like it because I know it's not on the same level. And
That's fine. And this speaks to how we're different types of fans, because, as you know, I'm not interested in Pottermore. I'm not interested in, really, the theme park. I'm not really interested in anything but the books. I'm not interested in the movies. I just want the books, you know, because they were so mind-blowing to me. And everything else just cheapens it. So that makes sense. And I think a lot of people will feel the same way that you feel. And I am probably just old and elitist in my Harry Potter fan opinions. So there you go. I think there's something I really want to ask you about Fantastic Beasts, but I have to remind myself to do it later. So Albus had a huge crush on her as well.
Oh God, that was weird.
Like, Harry's kid has a crush on Voldemort's kid. Like, it's no, you know.
That's going to be significantly more awkward to watch. It was already really awkward the first time around because I thought it was very forced and shoehorned.
She's like 20 something years old.
Yeah,
I know. 14. Well, he did also, Albus did also, you know, take Polyjuice Potion as Ron and make out with Hermione, so...
God, yes.
There is that. That is also a thing that happens.
So, yeah. So incest is a thing. Well, they're not related, but still, guys, still. Albus and Hermione shippers, your time is now. So, what else? Let's talk a little bit about... God, so much to talk about. Let's talk a little bit about the final act, which is Harry and his friends visiting Harry's parents dying. I want to bring this up quickly because I know this is something that a lot of people felt like was a big part of the play. I'm going to continue my cynicism and say that I felt like this was another very overused sort of fandom trope of Harry going to visiting, seeing his parents' death. And even though it was super emotional and super sort of evocative, the more I think about it, the more I just felt like a cheap way to get emotion out of the audience.
I don't disagree with you.
I think this is the moment that she was talking about when she was like, you're going to cry. Like, if I haven't made you cry, then I haven't done your job. Mm-hmm. I feel like betrayed because I didn't cry once, and I was like really into the story, so I was like really expecting for something to like really hit me hard, and nothing did it. Not even that. Yeah. Like, it just
I didn't cry either.
Like, yeah.
Well, I was definitely affected by it. I just afterwards I felt a little bit emotionally manipulated.
It was more like watching like a sad video on Facebook. As opposed to watching a really
yes, story. That's exactly it.
But if that were the only cliche, I think we might have felt a little different too, though.
Right, yeah. Of course. I agree. I mean, I definitely not like I'm. It's like the worst thing. It was one of the best things. I'm thinking more about it. And I'm thinking a lot about how it's going to be portrayed in script form, and I'm like,
I think this is one of the things in the script that is going to translate better script than in the play because
you can use your imagination.
Yeah, you can imagine it as you want to.
Yeah,
and like the way they did it in the play, like the actors were standing on stage and looking out like towards the audience where the sound was like playing from the back, and like so like we didn't see anything happen. We just saw the characters like reacting to it, and so we could have imagined it, but our focus was on the actors on the stage like reacting to what's happening. So like when you're reading it, you're going to be able to get and picture the entire thing. You're going to be able to picture everything without having to focus on what the actors are doing or how the actors are looking. So
but that was the best part. Like, that was what sold it for me, was the acting. Like, Harry's sort of gut-wrenching. Like, Jamie Parker just blew me away in that scene, you know?
Oh, well, yeah. But, like, it was absolutely amazing. But I think it's going to be stronger for readers because they're going to be thinking about that and thinking about what's going on behind them. Like, because they're not going to be thinking about, like, where's that coming from? Oh, my gosh, what's happening?
Yeah, you're right. Resolution, we're gonna get into talking about what do you guys want to talk about? Let's go into guys, we're gonna be here all night. This is ridiculous.
Can we just talk about how we were at dinner after part two or at the bar at part two, and Andrew, Katie, and I, and I think Selena, I think you were at that end of the table, because Donnie, I think you were at the other end of the table, but Andrew was like, okay, so clearly the cursed child is, and we all
found out the answers
at the same exact time.
The funny thing is, before Cursed Child came out, me and Andrew had this long-running argument who the cursed child was going to be, because he was like, it's Albus, there's no question it's Albus. And I was like, it's not going to be Albus, because it's like Albus is the main character, but it's clearly going to be stupid if it's Albus, right? So we were already disagreeing. So we were, and the funny thing about that is that we were both so ready to be right in that moment. So he was like, it's Albus. And I was like, it's Delphi. And Katie was like, it's Scorpius. And meanwhile, it's clearly Craig. So
yeah, obviously Craig is the child.
Have we even explained who Craig is on this podcast?
Craig is going to be the plot of Cursed Child 2.
3 and 4.
Yep. Because he was the rando extra. Because
Delphi killed Craig to prove that she can kill. Just like she's like, well, I can't kill someone, so I'm going to kill Craig.
Craig is the new spare. Yeah. cursed all the way. I mean, no one was more cursed than him. You know, no, it's just the funny thing is, you know, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, we leave still not knowing who the heck the Cursed Child was, because Andrew says it's all of them. But that's
I definitely think it's all three of them.
But it doesn't make sense. That would be Cursed Children. Like, that doesn't make sense.
But that doesn't sound as nice as a title as Cursed Child. I know.
But Cursed Kids?
I mean, like, Cursed Child. I mean, like, they're all cursed in a way. So yeah, it's, I mean,
it, yeah, it, who it, is it? It's, who's the title?
It's who you want it to be, Selena.
Well, yeah. Well, then Andrew said, well, it has to be Albus because he's on the cover. And I said, well, whose nest is he in?
Right.
Whose wings are they? That's Delphi. So I say it's Delphi. I think it's Delphi. That's my final. I think it's Delphi.
I'll say Scorpius.
Okay.
Because Scorpius's birth was cursed because of...
Yeah, they actually
he was the only one who in the play was linked to the word cursed.
First, yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you say, Danya?
I still can't decide on who the cursed child is because there's strong arguments for all of them for being the cursed child, but none of them are definitive. Yeah. Like, you can't definitively say one way or the other which one it is because the story doesn't tell you definitively who the cursed child is.
A bunch of
children. I actually like that, though.
Do you?
Yeah, at least, look, we're having a real nice discussion about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well,
that's
well.
Not inherently negative.
That's true. That's a good point. Maybe it's Hugo because he, like, literally didn't exist.
Rose stopped existing.
She was shafted.
Yeah, Rose was cursed with being the love interest that appeared at the last moment to tie things up nice and neatly. So moving on a little bit from that, one of the things that's sort of a nice transition, actually, that one of the things that ended the play was Harry and Albus make up and Scorpius and Rose sort of get together ish. Like, one of the things is Scorpius has found his courage and has asked Rose to the blood bowl. this just in general, and she's sort of like, she still kind of hates him, but we get this final little hint that maybe she doesn't hate him quite as much as she said she says she does. And earlier in the play we had this amazing hilarious scenes, one of the funniest bits with Scorpius, where he like says she smells of bread. And then he spends 5 minutes trying to justify that, no, but it's really nice bread. And I love bread.
Out of that hole. That was great.
That was amazing. That was so funny. I wonder how that's going to play on script, but definitely worked on stage. So Rose smells like bread, and Scorpius likes that. So and the thing that sort of, because there's a lot of things we can talk about with this. One of the things that bothers me most is that before this play, I was so ready for Scorpius Rose. You know, especially like after seeing her casting, that was just made it even better. But before that, I thought, oh, that's really cool. Like a Weasley, you know, Granger child and a Malfoy child, like getting together. That would be really nice. And then the play happened. And not only did Albus and Scorpius just have this ridiculous off the charts chemistry that we're going to talk about in a minute, but Rose was hardly in the play at all. And when she was, it was to be rude. Like, she was used so badly. Like, she was not likable at all.
She was great in the first five minutes.
Yeah, in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And then it was, like, nothing. She was written out of the play when they erased her from history. It was really weird. So,
and it's a real shame, though, because, like, she was such a perfect combination of Ron and Hermione that it was so good. Refreshing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was so nice to see, like, I don't, like all the characters are great. Like, the new characters are like really unique and wonderful, but there's something about Rose that just like outshone everyone else because she had Ron's like ridiculousness and comedic timing, but she was also just as smart as Hermione and used her smarts to be ridiculous.
Right.
And
right.
I am so mad that
And you know what? I'm so mad about. And then I'm going to let you talk about, like, preview your article a little bit, Kyle. I'm sure we all have a lot to say about it too. But one thing is that I feel like when you make a play like this, like, you have to play to the strengths that you have, and the fact that they had this amazing opportunity for something like with Scorpius and Albus. And I want to make it very clear that I'm not saying they had to go there. I'm saying everything was leading up to them going there. They didn't have Rose for most of the play. They only brought Rose back to be Scorpius's prize for having found his courage. Like, that's what she became. The point of Rose was to show that Scorpius had grown. That just was so unnecessary and so insulting to me as a person who was always looking for great female characters sort of allowed to stand on their own. Yes, we did have Hermione, and Hermione was fantastic, but, I mean, you know, so what? Like, that's not... that doesn't excuse everything else you do. So the fact that I was so ready for Scorpius Rose before the play started, and then at the end I realized that they literally just used Rose as this heteronormative, like, wrap-up bow. We learned that Albus liked older women, and Scorpius got Rose in the end. It just ruined what actually I was very excited about before the play, and I just, it's one of the things that disappoints me the most, is the kind of tropes that they sort of reinforced with that. It's another thing I feel like Harry Potter is above. And I'll shut up now, and someone else can talk for a bit.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, there was so much of it that felt so cheap. And we had a real long discussion about the Scorpius and Rose thing and bringing her in right at the end to be like, hey, I'm going to keep trying until we get together. Like, right. I can wear her down.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing is just so unnecessary and so unlike Harry Potter, who... when you look back at it, had so many different kinds of women throughout its whole story that was so interesting and multifaceted and so on. And to turn one not only into basically a prop that didn't even further the plot along, she was just there sometimes and then not at other times, and then was essentially right at the end a prize. Like, that's what Rose Granger Weasley was essentially like boiled down to in this play. She was just something for Scorpius to win in the end.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of, it's not okay. It's really not okay. And especially considering the fact that there was no sort of build up of that relationship. There was no seeing them interacting, growing, figuring each other out, like that gradual kind of working up into a relationship. No, the entire relationship development, chemistry, and genuine, what I saw as like borderline romantic connection, was between Albus and Scorpius. Like,
and it just feels like, and that's the thing with Albus, with Scorpius and Rose, it literally was, they are the only two male and female, same age characters who aren't related, they have to get together.
Yeah.
Like, there was, in fanfic, there's been so much great Scorpius Rose fanfic that could have set them up to be a legitimate couple that made sense. But in the play, it doesn't make sense.
No. It doesn't make sense whatsoever, because they only get, like, a total of, like, 20 minutes together. Like, if not that. Even. Like,
no, I think 20 minutes is being generous.
And one thing that I said in my article about Albus and Scorpius is that when it comes to Scorpius and Rose, like, one, like, cute scene out of a 5-hour play doth not a romance make. It just does not equate at all. It makes no sense that they'd put them together at that point. Yeah. Maybe if she had replaced Delphi with Rose, who went on the mm-hmm. entire adventure together, then it would make sense. Then we'd
and
have
you know what? Like, them bonding. It wouldn't be completely unreasonable to expect that there could be two girls and two guys equally on stage at the same time. Like, they didn't have to replace one girl with another girl to equal the two boys to make a trio.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It just, that whole thing, which is, it feels like it's perpetuating all the wrong things. And it doesn't feel, again, with Harry Potter, like, there's so many things about it that don't feel like they explored the possibilities that J.K. Rowling is sort of championing. And one of the things, obviously, that Kyle's alluding to is the fact that, and Andrew has said as well, and a lot of us feel, is that what they had with Albus and Scorpius was a perfect opportunity to organically include an LGBT relationship into Harry Potter canon, not just a character who's mentioned out of context of the books, not just some side character who is there to be representation, but a main organic relationship. What a statement that would have been.
Oh, yeah.
And not to say that they should have done it because it would have been a statement. If you've seen the play, the chemistry between them, the way their friendship develops, they have this whole scene on a staircase where it's literally like
they have
dance.
Multiple scenes on yeah, the staircase.
But that yeah. staircase scene though.
It was a dance where they were like almost going to each other, going away. It was like it was the ultimate sort of romantic build up. And Harry Potter is about friendship. Like, Harry Potter ultimately at the end of the day is about friendship. I do understand this. I don't wish to undervalue the importance of friendship. But another thing Harry Potter is also, it's about love. It's about familiar love, it's about friendship, and it's about romantic love. And the one way in which J.K. Rowling has just failed her audience is to include LGBT representation. You know, and the thing that we're coming away from with this play is that she's holding down the line of no LGBT representation still. And it's like it upsets me to the point where I don't even know, like, how are you not giving your readership someone to identify with. You're not giving them a place in your world, and I don't count Dumbledore in that. I don't think that's fair.
Mm-mm.
Because she mentioned that randomly after the story ended, and also
that wasn't even something that she had planned to reveal, by the way. Right. Like she was asked a question on stage at Carnegie Hall, and her response to that was the fact that Dumbledore was gay, and it was like, wait, what? And then to make it like worse, like she tries to explain herself that, like, during the movies, when they are talking about Dumbledore, they're considering putting in the script that, like, Dumbledore had talked to this lady at some point, and mm-hmm. then she had to write on the script that Dumbledore is gay.
Right.
But then that was an opportunity for them to do something, and they didn't. So, like, she's yeah. been willing, like it's been hidden for so long.
It's
that,
hidden.
Like,
that's the thing about Dumbledore, is that he may be gay, but he's also hiding. Like, it's yeah. not a thing. And I know you can argue, oh, well, it doesn't have to be a thing, but it kind of does when you have your only gay character live in a loveless life.
Yeah.
Loveless life, sad. Mm-hmm, go on.
Here's the thing about LGBT representation versus representation of race, is that representation of race is a mm-hmm. visual thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that almost immediately when you look at someone. So being able to include that, you don't need to, like, inherently say what they are, because a lot of the time you can pick up visual cues of what their racial background is or what their culture is in comparison to something like your sexuality. Now, it's such a complicated, nuanced thing that a lot of the time you really have to show that at least once in order to establish what that person's sexuality is. So you can have characters who are incidentally somewhere on the LGBT spectrum, but you need to be able to show that or say something at least once so that you understand that that's the sexuality of the character. You don't need to then make that a central part of that plot and story. There has to be some way for you to establish that that is a part of them, because it's not as simple as a visual thing. Mm-hmm. It's something that you have to state.
Exactly. And there's something, like, I think as well, inherently powerful about including incidental representation without making it, like, without having to make it, like, it's not that I'm saying that you can also make it a plot point, but the thing that would have been so great about this particular representation would have been that it would have just been a romance without having to excuse it, without having to explain it, without having any of that stuff, without having to justify having it in the story. Like, it just you come away with that watching their friendship develop and go, okay, but this is like Ron and Harry all over again. Maybe we could have taken this opportunity to do something different. And I also just want to say, when I was listening to MuggleCast's spoiler review, and Andrew does go into this significantly as well, and just talked about how he sees this as one of the perfect opportunities for Jo to finally represent what is a huge part of her fan base that she has just been underserving ever since the book started. And she had a chance to do something special with this play, and she didn't. And someone in the comments went, oh, why can't boys ever just be friends? Or it said something about that. And I reacted to that on Twitter too. I said, the question isn't why can't they ever be friends. The question is why can't they ever be more?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, just once.
Like in what media, in what show, in what movie are you watching that's not LGBT themed that has two male characters that are friends? And, like, in what show do they, or media, do they ever become more than that? Like, they're always just friends. They never,
well,
I'll
tell you where. In fandom, in fan fiction, like, everyone's always looking for, like, pairings because media doesn't give them that.
No, but versus the argument of saying, why can't they just be friends? Like, I'm asking those people, please show me in what response, what warrants you to say, why can't they just be
friends? But what I'm saying. That's, you know, what I'm, like, asking. That's what I'm answering your question, is I'm saying they are not looking at the media. They're looking at fandom. And they're saying, oh, well, look at all this fan fiction for Harry and Draco. Look at all this fan fiction for Ginny and Hermione. Look at all this fan fiction for Remus and Sirius. Like, look at all these. Why can't anyone ever be friends? Look at you sexualizing every friendship in the series. Whereas what they're failing to realize is that the reason people do that, apart from the fact that they're just interesting romances, is because there isn't anything in mainstream media for, like, to give them the representation they need. That's why people seek fandom in the first place. And so I feel like to sort of throw that away and say, oh, well, you know, it's important, you know, like yes, of course, Albus and Scorpius is a fantastic friendship. And if Remus and Sirius had been lovers, then we wouldn't be having this discussion, probably. You know what I mean? Like, does that make sense? Like, it just...
Yeah.
It just seems... Like, it's one of the things where you're just like, why? Like, why not go there? Why not make this statement? When you look at them on screen or on the stage, you will see exactly what we mean.
Fandom exists because there isn't a diverse enough media to satisfy what everyone needs to see in it. So many people in our society do not see themselves on screen. That is a hard truth that people need to understand. That is why so many different things in fandom exist. Pairings, friendships, alternate universes, everything. And that's why it's written. It's because we're not getting the satisfaction out of the media that we're consuming that we have to create it for ourselves. When you look at the media, we don't have this relationship. We've never seen it. Never. We don't have it. We have to create that for ourselves. And then it just makes it all that more glaring when you have a medium that made it so that it would so easily have become that without undermining anything else, with it just fitting in perfectly and being this really sweet, really genuine thing. And instead, they shoehorn two female relationships or attractions into it to basically be like, but this is how it's going to be instead.
Right. And talk about your symbolism of the Malfoys and the Potter sort of uniting their families like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, that would be great. Like, not to say that the Granger, Weasley, but that's different. That's not Harry and Draco you know, level of and, of rivalry, you know.
And to like help like people like who are listening and are have no idea what kind of physical or not physical connection, but what kind of oh my gosh, I can't think of the word. Chemistry. Chemistry. Yeah. That's okay. For those who don't know what the kind of chemistry that Albus and Severus have, it's not just like we're hopping out of our like Harry Draco fanboy fangirl moments and being like they would be so cute together, and it's not like we're saying like we just need gay representation and like they're the two main males and so obviously they would be it, like it's mm-hmm. not any of like that. Like I think I don't know if we've already made it clear, but to anyone listening, the reason we feel this way is because it organically showed up in the play without our expectations.
Yeah.
We didn't expect this to happen. We didn't go into this going, okay, come on, like some gay people, let's go. Like we saw part one and the connection, first of all, between the actors was just really great. And just between the characters, they organically get so close and it happens in like a physical way as well, because Scorpius he's the type of kid who doesn't like to be hugged. Mm-hmm. And he makes it very clear. And in the very beginning, like Albus hugs him to thank him for something. And he's like, okay, you don't need to hug me. It's fine. And as the play moves on, Albus hugs him more frequently because of the things that happen. And he gets less and less hesitant about these hugs. And he's like, it's fine because it's his best friend that's hugging him. And there comes a point where at the end of part two, Scorpius hugs Albus because he's finally back. And it's like he's let down his wall, and you've seen this, and you've seen him grow to like accept this physicality between the two of them that he doesn't really accept between anyone else. And it's not that it's gay or forced or anything. It's just it's so natural. And then the staircase scene just it proves that they want to be friends. They want to be together. And it's like, it's not that we're trying to force this upon anything, but if you see the show and if you read the novel, I don't know, or the script, I don't know if it's going to come across as well in the script, but it just happens so naturally. And that's why we're so upset, because it's just like, it could have been done and no one would have batted an eye. Like, obviously, like people who are like homophobes or like people who are like judging, like, why do they have to get together? They'll bat an eye. But like, if you just look at it with an open mind, it'd be like, well, yeah, that makes sense. Like they were characters and they liked each other and it formed really naturally. And the unnatural part about it all is the fact that Scorpius is like, I want to ask Rose out after 10 minutes of being with her. Like,
right.
And so like, sorry, I came out of my shell there to like just explain that, because I feel like I don't know if we would been able to explain just how naturally that happened. It's not that's that really we just good. Mm-hmm. did mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
It's very important to say that, it's because I feel like a lot of people sort of balk when they hear someone is like, oh, maybe these two same-sex characters should get together, when there's no like concrete evidence of their sexuality. People are really quick to go, oh, you just want everyone to be, you know, gay. And it's like, it's really not what's happening here. So it's just very, very clear. But I also just think, like, just one final point I want to make is that I think also one of the things that why this hurts so much is because we've just been talking for the past 2 hours about how this play basically takes every single fanfic trope and puts it onto a stage and says, this is your 8th Harry Potter story. We're giving you all of this fan service. We're taking all of these fan theories. We're taking all of these tropes, except the biggest one, you know, except the only one that matters. You know what I mean? Like, except the one that, like Danya was saying, you know, and obviously they do amazing things. They make, like, Hermione, again, the casting of Numa Dumasweni is just unbelievably fantastic, mostly because she is unbelievably fantastic as Hermione. There's a lot of cool things, but it just hurts that they clearly know, like, they must know what fandom is talking about, since they took every single trope. Or maybe the problem is they don't, and that's why it feels like someone's first fanfic. But yeah, so basically, this is legitimate, very upsetting. And actually, the one thing I wanted to ask Kyle is that you said you were so excited about Fantastic Beasts, and I was just wondering how you would feel about Fantastic Beasts if that also had no LGBT representation, because this is something I've been thinking a lot about recently.
I'd be really furious about it all, actually, because Fantastic Beasts already has a hurdle to go through when it comes to race representation, and that's something that, like, we've already discussed on Hype before. But if she continues to hide the LGBT community, it's going to be a problem. Like, she can be as supportive as she wants to, but actions speak louder than words. And one thing that I had said in my article is that, like, I've proven that, like, J.K. Rowling has always been supportive of the community. She's always been there to help the cause of making sure that kids don't feel like they have to hide. But I find it ironic because she's hiding the characters in her works. She says that Hogwarts is an open place, and she's answered tweets saying that it, like LGBT students feel safe in Hogwarts, but they're nowhere to be seen. If that continues with Fantastic Beasts, she has to do something, or like I feel like, obviously, like, she doesn't have to, but, like, I feel like someone needs to make her accountable for this, you know, because you can't go about and claiming that it's an accepting world when we don't see it. You can say it all you want, but why do you get to represent so many other types of people, and instead you're just saying that you're going to represent the LGBT community and not actually do it?
Right.
So, like, she, so
my,
like,
my hope is that there is a character that's LGBT in Fantastic Beasts, and that's why she can sort of, I don't know, that's what she's focusing on right now, but I guess we'll see. Anyway, I just,
yeah, I'm hoping to.
It does take place in the 1920s, though, so I really wouldn't be surprised if they use that as a justification as to why there aren't any.
But yeah, that's not a good enough justification, because where it's taking place is hugely diverse.
Yeah, yeah. But we're already seeing sort of, yeah, anyway, I think, it, like, that's a, sadly, you know, Katie is absolutely right that that might be their excuse, but we know it's not a good one. Anyway, this is not the Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, historically, it's completely wrong, and if they use that for a justification, there are countless books that you can literally throw at them to be like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Okay, so guys, I guess kind of just sort of sorry to randomly move along, but we spent a lot of time on this. But no, I do want to talk about something that I know we all enjoyed, which is the adult Harry Potter, like the original Harry Potter characters, how they were portrayed on screen, and how we felt their stories were developed. And I want to start talking about Noma Dumezweni as Hermione. We already spoke a lot about her in the spoiler-free discussion because we loved her. And I just want to know, like, what did you guys think of her, like, having such a significant role, being so involved with Harry, being the Minister of Magic? Like, how did you feel about all that?
She was Book Hermione, and not to say anything bad about Emma Watson or the movies, but she had a spunk that Hermione had more had in the books, and then obviously the intelligence, and you just care about her a lot more.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, she was definitely the high point. You know,
I agree with you when you were talking about it, like, just a days before, where Noma is my Hermione. Like, she's just, she's the Hermione that I want to picture everything in now, because she's just so good. And I think she's probably, other than Scorpius, like, Scorpius is a fantastic character on its own, but, like, in terms of the original characters, she was by far the best. She's better than Harry. I wasn't, like, really a great fan of Harry. She's better than Draco, better than anyone else.
Oh, I liked Harry.
I loved Harry. Yeah.
See, I didn't like Harry all that much. I really actually kind of almost despised him at some point.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that. I just do want to add about Hermione that I think she was a bright spot for me in the play. I loved how much she was in the play. Like, because again, we kind of also talked a little bit about the lack of female characters, like, other than Delphi. but Hermione sort of did, she was just so awesome. Like, she was just so cool. And I love how much, even though I missed Ron, I loved how involved she was with Harry and how close friends they were and how close they were working together as adults, because I feel like that's what would really happen. And the sort of the brother sister friendship there, talk about your platonic friendship, there is your perfect example of a amazing male-female platonic friendship that I just thought that was every scene with the two of them were my favorite scene. But on Harry, though, let's talk a little bit about Harry. Tell us why you didn't like him, Kyle.
Okay, no, hold on. Are we talking about the character or are we talking about the actor?
I assumed you were talking about the character.
Okay, good, because that's what I was talking about, yeah. He infuriated me so many times because maybe it is in his character and maybe this is Book Harry, but he was just such a bad dad and such a bad person that I was like, I refuse to believe that this is the same person who grew up with no parents. Like, that grew up with no one to look forward to and someone who has three kids that he wouldn't treat them all equally. Like, the whole reason he has this terrible relationship with Albus is because Albus feels so underloved in comparison to Lily and James. And why are you doing this to your kid? Especially given the fact that he says, I wish you weren't my son. Like, in what world am I supposed to believe that Harry Potter would ever tell a child of his that? Like,
I don't agree with everybody on that one. I really don't.
Okay. See, like,
I
but
don't.
Like,
I'm not sure I do either, to be honest
I
with you.
I totally understand why a 40-year-old Harry who hasn't had those kinds of emotions of being an orphan would, in a fit of anger, just say something like that. Mm-hmm. I totally believe that that would happen.
I do too. Oh. And you know what? It's funny because we're unrewatchable right now. We're talking about Buffy. And everyone's like super mad. I don't know if you guys are Buffy fans, but everyone is like super mad at Joyce, who is Buffy's mom, for all of the like terrible parenting she does. And every time I go, yeah, okay, but it's super realistic because people are like that in real life. And I know that this is not the Harry like that we're proud of. But it feels to me like a real genuine, it felt like a real genuine moment. And I also think sometimes, I feel like I'm definitely guilty of putting Harry on this pedestal. He's not a perfect human. And I think Joe did a lot in the books to show us that sometimes he was wrong and sometimes he was petty and sometimes he acted irrationally and upset people. And I think this goes, I understand that for many people, this is like a point of no return. Like the Harry we know would never, like, this is crossing the line, but I think the moment it happens in the play, everyone knows it crossed the line. Harry knows it, Albus knows it, the audience knows it. And immediately, it's like, oh shit, what have I done? I've done the thing that a parent must never do. And I like that they make Harry do that, actually.
And I think
it's very powerful.
What you said is actually part of the problem, that everybody's thinking, it's not the Harry we know. Mm-hmm. Well, the Harry we know was a teenager, and those kinds of emotions were at the surface of his personality or whatever. He's an adult now. It's been 20 years. He doesn't I would be very surprised if he still has those kinds of feelings that strongly anymore, that he'd remember how he felt as a teenager and feeling alone and not having parents. Like, it's a lifetime ago.
What I was missing, and like, it kind of comes back to the whole Cedric thing. Like, it's Albus's reasoning for acting and for doing the things he does. And Scorpius even says it at one point. He's like, you're always talking about yourself and your own problems. Like, take a seat, you know? I do think that makes sense. It's a good story. For me, I just kind of always felt a little bit removed by it. Like, but yeah, but what is actually his problem? You know, like, I never really understood it. But I do understand Harry's frustration, maybe because everyone in the play were frustrated with Albus. You know. Donya, did you have anything to add about that?
No, I think I side more with you and Katie on this, that I can understand why Harry lashed out. He's had anger problems and issues previously, and it's very in keeping with his character that he would lash out and say something that he didn't necessarily mean.
Mm-hmm.
Harry is very good and has always been very good at saying things to people that will hurt them. He's very good at
it's that. It's not just that, though. It's like not just that moment that makes me dislike Harry, but it just the fact that he would let his relationship with his son get that bad. Like, it feels as I'm watching, it feels like he's not trying. Like, it.
I mean, to a point as well, though, is there's only so much that he could do outside of term time without having to continuously go to Hogwarts, which the fact that Albus is allowed to be so isolated from his father and this relationship to continue to fester, that is probably a hugely contributing factor to their relationship breaking down and getting to the point it does, because Harry can't continuously be there to try and resolve and fix it. And also, he has a job. He has a responsibility to the rest of the wizarding world by being basically in charge of magical security and enforcement. So protecting the entire wizarding world and being in charge of the auras and so on, and not being able to be in his son's life 24/7 in order to put in the genuine hard work that would need to be put in to get their relationship back to that point is difficult. Because he can't live at Hogwarts.
But he has such a good... I can't really say because we haven't really seen it. But based on what we've seen from James being in the play, like, it seems like their relationship is fine. And it feels like if he's having struggles with his kid, like, he should be having struggles with, like, all of his kids.
Well, it's probably also, again, we're running so long now, but it's probably also with James. James is probably good at Quidditch. James and Gryffindor, they have a lot in common. You know, Albus isn't really good at the things his dad is good at. He doesn't feel like he has anything to contribute. You know, there's a lot of layers to it.
Mm-hmm. See, what there's I would say
a realism to that.
To that point, that if it is only Albus he's having problems with, that it's not that he's a bad dad. It's literally because of Albus. That there's something with Albus that's not connecting, as opposed to Harry.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I know I feel like a lot of people sort of are justified in their anger, especially when it comes. But this is one of the few things about the play that I actually think is justified.
And deserves a lot more time of exploring it.
That should have been the point of the play.
I totally thought that was going to be the plot of the play. Mm-hmm. A family drama.
Yeah. I thought it was going to, and especially with the synopsis as well, is that it was going to deal with what it's like to be a child of Harry Potter. Mm-hmm, what that means for how people treat you.
But we were just asked to accept that it was a bad thing from Albus's perspective without ever really understanding why it was such a bad thing.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit. But, you know, I do want to say one thing that I am super angry about Harry, that was a weird sentence. is that he kept him from Scorpius? That was the one thing that was unforgivable to me. Whole acting out of anger, that was okay. This was a premeditated act. It came out of nowhere. Like, he was like, oh, well, Albus is acting out. Scorpius is probably a bad influence. I'm gonna ban them from seeing each other. And I'm gonna give McGonagall a map of Hogwarts. Yeah, Marauder's map, so she can make sure they aren't in the same place at the same time. Excuse me, no. Harry would not do. That would never happen. Like, I call bullshit on that. That would never happen.
Because he's a Malfoy? Did they kind of bury that hatchet?
Right. Especially considering how nice Draco is, you know?
Yeah.
And I was, like, following Harry around, wanting to be his friend and talking about how lonely he is, you know? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I think that's, like, the thing about that. Like, that is, like, an Umbridge thing to do, you know, to keep kids from... Like, that's what she did with trying to dissolve the DA and stuff like that. Like, that's what that felt like to me, and that felt wrong. So kind of a bad dad in that way. And then also some other things I want to talk about. I want to say that I did love the focus on Harry and Ron and Hermione's romance, just because that we were so worried that we're gonna, like, break up or be divorced, but actually their love story, like, they're in different realities, they weren't together. Like, either Ron married Padme or Hermione, like, was alone and a teacher, or, like, they were not together in the Voldemort future either, because Hermione was in love with Snape or whatever was going on. And and then like, at the end, they were, like, so in love with each other that they're like, oh, we're gonna renew our vows, which is ridiculous, but also cute.
Yeah, it's like Ron being like, I've heard this thing that muggles do where they renewed their vows, and I'd really like to do that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, Ron!
It's cute. It was stupid, and it was lame, and it was ridiculous, but it was cute. And
it was very Ron.
Right, it was very Ron, and I also like the fact that we thought they were going to get divorced, but instead they just got married twice, so suck it. I'm a Ron Hermione shipper forever, above all else, so that made me happy. And Ginny was really good. Ginny was really powerful. I thought Ginny had some really assertive moments. We talked in the other podcast how she was basically just there to serve Harry, which was unfortunate. I do love how she sometimes took Draco's side in some of the arguments, though.
She really did not... a lot.
But I thought that was interesting. That added a nice depth to their interactions, also because you never got the sense that Ginny had the same kind of resentment to Draco that everyone else did. Then there's fanfic Draco. Fanfic Draco is basically like every single fanfic trope of Draco you can imagine, put on like as though it was real. And what I like
don't
is
think
that
it was fanfic. But
no,
okay.
Well, we talked about this last time. Like the reason that the reason that this Draco is so prevalent in fanfic is because they see it in the way he's written. Why I want to say it's fanfic is because J.K. Rowling has repeatedly stated how horrible of a human being Draco is. So despite what you see on the page, she's like debunked that continuously. And then this play comes along and basically confirms all of what we thought Draco was, which is a softy who's like has no friends and who's really sad all the time and who just wanted like someone to talk to.
And deeply him and loves Scorpius his... were so cute.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Deeply loves his wife, deeply loves his son, and wants the best for his son and to protect him. Basically has cut ties with his father. Mm-hmm. Like, it's... And also, he was the one who had zero concerns about ending the Malfoy line. It was Astoria who wanted a child.
Yeah.
And not to continue the Malfoy line, but because she wanted to have a son with Draco, even though she knew that it could weaken her considerably and ultimately lead to her death, which it did. Mm-hmm. And Draco didn't want to put her in that place. He wanted as long as he could possibly get with her. But
he still loved his son. It wasn't like a resentment thing towards Scorpius. It wasn't. Yeah. That was the most beautiful. Like, everything with the Malfoys in this play was the best.
Yeah.
And like, the fact it was that so beautiful.
The fact that Astoria knew how deeply lonely that Draco was, and knowing that regardless of whether she had Scorpius or not, the curse that was on her, which I didn't fully understand exactly how she was dying, only that she was dying very slowly and that she was going to die young. That was basically
she was
what
just was... sick, right? Like, it was just an illness or something.
It was no, it was a curse that was placed on her.
On her grandmother?
Yeah, and it was passed down. But it means that she would die young. Okay. And she wanted Draco to have someone after she was gone, a part of both her and Draco. Mm-hmm, and that's why she wanted Scorpius, so that Draco wouldn't be devastatingly lonely after she died, because she knew she was going to die anyway.
This comparison between like Draco being such a really good dad compared to Harry is just like, well, okay, you know it's weird when Draco's a better dad than Harry is.
Yeah, you know it's weird when like, Draco is giving Harry tips.
Yes,
like, you know, that's why I didn't like Harry as much, because it was just like, I mean, I love the fact that Draco is such a good dad, but like, I was like, really, dude, like, you're like childhood arch enemy is doing such a good job raising his kid and loving unconditionally. You can learn a tip or two from that.
Draco like, only has one kid to take care of, to be fair.
Yeah.
He can devote all of his time and attention to Scorpius.
Yeah, it's true. But still, he could still really, teach Harry a lesson or two.
It was really interesting how Scorpius turned out underneath all of that love and affection as well. Like,
yeah.
It just...
Yeah.
It was just... And we didn't really talk about Scorpius, but Scorpius was just the shining light, and not just because Anthony Boyle is so fantastic at being engaging on all levels. Like, Scorpius's journey through the play of finding himself, of finding his friendship with Albus, of finding an acceptance of his father, like finding his courage, being a hero. Everything that Scorpius went through was just wonderful and yeah. so much more engaging than what was going on with Albus. I really feel like like Jack Thorne, the writer of the play, I feel like he's like a total Malfoy fanboy and he hates Ron. You know, because
if you look at that part with Ron and Draco was so funny.
But yeah, I mean, I think it was so good. And I think it was like, when I say fanfic Draco, I don't mean that he was necessarily out of character. I think he was in character the way that readers interpret Draco, not what Rowling has said, which is weird, but I'm okay with it because he was so amazing. So I'm just like, fine, just give me that Draco. There was also like some characters who weren't in the play that we wish could have been in the play. And actually, this was part of a question that we got from Jenny McNiven, who said, do we get any mentions of characters who aren't in the play and what they're up to now? Is George in it? No. And no. The only character that is repeatedly mentioned is Neville, and he never shows up. And it is the weirdest thing. Like, they keep mentioning Neville. Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting because they mention him so often that at one point when they talk about how Cedric killed Neville, the entire audience gasped.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he wasn't even in the show, and the audience gasped when they found out that Neville was dead. Like,
Neville's a teacher at Hogwarts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a professor at Hogwarts.
And so, they talk about him.
They do. They also talk about him when they go into the Forbidden Forest after Delphi has sort of taken Scorpius and Albus into the Forbidden Forest. And that's like, they know that they've kind of disappeared there and they're like trying to find them leading up to when Craig dies. Because they get Neville to lead that search as well, because he knows the Forbidden Forest very well. So it's like, and we still didn't see him?
Mm-hmm. It was the weirdest thing, like, considering how much weight they gave to Cedric, the absence of Neville. Like, could you imagine, like, if that had been switched, people would have loved it. People love Neville. Hugo was so funny. After part one, we thought they'd retcon Hugo. We thought he didn't exist because they didn't mention him once. And at one point, I swear, Ron and Hermione talked about their one kid.
And then in part two,
we got this tiny little mention, throwaway line mentioning Hugo, and I swear they added that in. Like, I swear, like, they just added that into a piece, like, people on Tumblr or something, because that was weird. So Hugo hardly exists. Teddy is not mentioned at all. Teddy Lupin. James and Lily are there, but very briefly, and you don't even, like, they don't have any, they're not there, they're just in the background. At two scenes. George is not mentioned, I think. He's definitely not in the play. Luna's not in the play. Weasley family. The Dursleys are in the play a lot because Harry has a bunch of dream flashbacks.
Hagrid, who else is there. Is not in that? God damn it. What's her face's daughter? Victoire
is not in there, no. None of the Weasleys, except Ron and Ginny. What else? Morning Myrtle is there for one scene. Like, it's a funny amazing. Scene, but it's also very weird.
It's so good.
Yeah. Just to sort of echo what happened in Goblet of Fire, I guess. It's a very eclectic mix of fan service with characters that we didn't really want to see and the absence of the characters we did want to see.
Yeah. Like,
we have Cedric, we have Umbridge, we have Hagrid. Snape, but we have Hagrid in a flashback. Times. Two flashbacks, actually. Really weird. We have freaking Bane, the centaur.
Oh my god,
Came out of the forest looking exactly did in a Harry Potter musical. It was the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Like, the way he spoke, the way he acted, the way I was not a fan.
It's very strange.
It was very over the top. Hagrid in that scene where he took Harry away, it was really weird, also because he took the baby but like swept it around, like they had this whole choreography thing where they did that did a swirly thing and he did that with the baby. the trolley lady was in there. We had this whole thing. The best part of the play was when the trolley lady from the train like came up. She was like, anything off the trolley? And then like they try to get off the train. They're on the roof. And then you just hear, everything off the trolley. And she's just like walking along. It's amazing. Then they go into this huge long backstory of him, of her being the guardian of the train. And she's been on the train ever since it started.
So good.
She has to make sure that no students get off the train. And we got like extra information in there too. That Fred and George tried it, and Sirius Black tried it. That was nice. That's
true. So, kind of disappointing. Kind of a bad use of elements to bring back and elements not to bring back. Dumbledore was there in portrait form. It really cool looking effects. If nothing else,
did we mention McGonagall?
Obviously McGonagall. Oh my god, she was in it a lot. Actually, she was the headmistress of Hogwarts. She was in all of the Ministry scenes where Hermione sort of held court, you can say. So yeah, I guess that's pretty much everyone. Wrapping up, my god, we just keep going. We should talk a little bit about our favorites, moments, and scenes from the play. So, Katie, what was yours? We kind of just talked about that
already. Well, we touched on it already. Mm-hmm. My favorite scene, hands down, was the trolley lady scene in part one. Because I thought that was so funny. It felt the most J.K. Rowling, I guess, because it's quirky and odd, and it added new information that didn't feel... It felt ridiculous, but in a good way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I thought that was really cool. That was one of the coolest takeaways from the play. And Kyle, what was yours?
My favorite scene was the battle between Draco and Harry. Because, like, I don't know why, like, I knew how it was being done, but it still blew my mind, and all the magic and the way that they were lifted into the air and they were, like, frozen and the magic that they did, like, it was just like, ah, this is so cool. It was like, this is what you get when you go to see Harry Potter on stage. Like, it's exactly what you would expect, and it's even better.
Yeah, that was cool. And Danya, why don't you go for the one that's also mine, because it was really good.
I don't want to steal it from you. I was hoping that you'd go next. But...
Okay, well, I can go for it if you take go. One of your other ones.
Yeah, I'll take one of my other ones.
Okay, but... so me and Danya both loved one of the scenes. I think it was, I don't even know what part it was in. I think it was part one. It was a scene in the kitchen with Harry, Hermione, Ron, and Ginny. It's one of the few low-key moments we get with the adults. It's a conversation. Basically just catching up on everything that's going on. We have a little bit of each of them. Ginny is sort of very proactive in the scene. We see Ginny and Ron are kind of like fighting a little bit, and you see them sort of take sides and argue, and you just have the sense that their friendship has endured and that it's not the trio anymore. It's the foursome. It's the square of these four, like, parents / friends / co-workers / life partners
/ family
/ family. Yeah, they are they are family now. They are each other's closest people, and it's just amazing to see. I'm happy Ginny is involved. I'm happy Harry, Ron, and Hermione are still so close. I'm happy that we see a lot of throughout the play of Harry and Ginny being really close and in love, and Ron and Hermione being close and in love, and Hermione and Harry being best friends, and Ginny and Ron being siblings that are close, and we don't actually see a lot of Ginny and Hermione. There was a shocking, like, I will be interested to see if this passes the Bechdel test by no more than a scrape, but that's another matter. And even the scenes where Draco joined them, like, I feel like that was such a pure moment, and I think that's what fans will appreciate the most, is just getting a little slice of normalcy for these people.
Mm-hmm. Did we talk about the Polyjuice potion scene? Because that was astounding.
Well, that can be one of your favorite scenes, too.
Okay, sorry. Because, like, just the way that they pulled off the Polyjuice potion was, like, mind-blowing. And it's one of the scenes that's stuck in my head.
So it's the, like, scene where basically they recreate Deathly Hallows, and Scorpius and Albus have to go into the Ministry of Magic, and they Polyjuice themselves into Ron and Harry, and Scorpius is actually Harry, and Albus is Ron, and that's kind of a funny, like, the adult actors pull it off really well, and obviously Albus gets to make out with Hermione for some bizarre reason.
It was so odd.
Several times.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
But my favorite part was this, like during those scenes is like you'd have the adult actors like being mm-hmm. Albus pretending mm-hmm. to be them, and then like 5-10 seconds later they would come around the stage and come from the other side and be like their normal selves.
Yeah,
and it was like holy, like you just like ran and you're not out of breath at all. Mm-hmm. Like this is crazy.
Yeah. It was like you didn't even realize. Like you didn't even realize it was happening.
It was so fluid. Mm-hmm. It was like mm-hmm. watching Orphan Black. It was like, oh my, I didn't like even grasp this right now.
Yeah. So good. And then I guess I would want to add, everything with Scorpius was my favorite scene. Like I just made this so abundantly clear that he was the best part of that play. By far. And Danya, what do you have?
Because you took the kitchen scene, I am going to take all of the ridiculously romantic staircase scenes with Albus and Scorpius as they're going up and down the stairs together and moving around the castle together, and also that devastatingly beautiful break-up staircase scene where they've been forcibly separated and can no longer talk to or speak to each other, and you just see them missing each other on the stairs as the stairs move around and gazing longingly across the staircases at each other, knowing that they both want to be together and to talk to each other, because that's the closest friendship that they've had in the 4 years that they've been at Hogwarts, and yet they are so far away from each other.
Mm-hmm. We could have had it all. Yeah, no, yes, absolutely. I loved that scene. So I'm wondering, just the final things to wrap up, we don't need to talk about this. This is our final question. Will this be considered canon? Do we consider it canon? Thoughts,
no.
React. No. No?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you don't consider it canon?
No.
Not any more than information in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no to a point. I like certain aspects that I would like to see people take bits and be like, but I want to explore this in a way that fits more fluidly with the books. I'm going to be interested to see what fandom comes up with on the basis of what we've seen character-wise in terms of that personalities.
Yeah, just give it back to fandom, guys. That's come on.
But seeing fandom explore it in a way that's a lot more thought out and carefully crafted, because things like Albus and Scorpius's relationship and the fractured relationship between Albus and Rose and Albus and his father, and a little bit more of Scorpius and Malfoy, and maybe a little bit of what their home life was like as well. You know, that stuff that I'm really fascinated by and interested by, I just think I would like to see it explored in a different way. So no, I don't want to consider the actual story canon, but there are aspects of it that I would like to see explored in a different way.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think they sort of feel the same way. And I will say, as much as I am willing not to consider this canon, I don't think I can't. I don't think I can help it. Like, I think the more we talk about this, the more it sort of settles in with fandom. I think I'm going to have to. But it doesn't mean I'm going to hold it to the book. Like, when I read the books, I'm not going to think, oh my god, I cannot believe that the Voldemort is going to have a daughter. Like, I can separate them to that point, but I do sort of consider this the sequel. You know, kind of like, what is a good comparison? Like, I don't know, like, say the Hobbit movies, for example, for Lord of the Rings was so amazing. Like, now when I see the Lord of the Rings, I'm not going to think, oh my god, I can't believe that Bilbo, like, blah, whatever. But when I see the Hobbit movies, or when people talk about the Hobbit movies, I'm not going to think, I know it's different because it's not the books. I know, guys, I'm sorry. I know this is a bad comparison, but it's the best I can think of. Like, it's sort of, it is a real thing that has real value that I can't ignore. But I don't have to like it. And I don't have to consider it on the level as the books, you know.
Same. Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like I will consider it canon but the parts that make sense and the parts that like can like fit together with the books in a way that I can envision and be like, yeah, all right, I got it. But like the parts that are like break rules that were previously set I'm not going to accept that because that just doesn't make sense.
I accept the adult too. The adult actress was just so good. And I have to say they're much closer to what I imagined the characters than the movies.
Yeah,
so I'm probably going to take those images and I'm probably going to take the idea of what they're like as adults. But I think that the problem is all the time travel stuff is just so incongruous with what I imagine the Harry Potter rules, the rules of the Harry Potter world are, that every time I think of that, I'm like, yeah, but that didn't really happen. You know, I'm already beginning to feel like, oh, well, that was just stupid. You know, that was just someone's dream, you know. but all of the sort of the building blocks of the world, like Danya was saying, I think they are going to be a part of this world now. And we have this whole theory that the albatross, that's not right, the augury is actually going to be sort of a key part of Fantastic Beasts, and that Joe Rowling is actually going to attempt to incorporate Delphi into canon, which is going to be make it very difficult to ignore her existence. But I will do my best.
I was going to say, I can pretty easily pretend that Delphi doesn't exist. It'll be or sticking my fingers in my ears. La, 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 la.
I think I'm just going to think that she's crazy. Like, that's just my... I'm going to say, okay, well, she thinks... Everyone thinks she's Voldemort's daughter, but she's not really.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is where we are. We know we didn't touch on absolutely everything, but we did spend 2.5 hours. So, hopefully, hopefully it's enough. We do have... want to wrap up with some comments real quickly. I'm going to save this one for hype. So, this first one's an email from Philippa. Katie, do you want to get that one?
Sure. So from Philippa, hi guys, I saw the play last week and basically feel the same way about it as you guys, or from what I gleaned from your spoiler-free episode. My main disappointment was the way that the script dealt with Scorpius and Albus's relationship. Like you, I found that the stage came to life when they were on it together. Their chemistry was palpable. Is it me, or did the writer's director totally set us up to expect a love story between them? It's not just you. I came away from part one thrilled that we might finally get a visible gay couple in the Harry Potter world. And at the end of part two, not only did they disregard all the love tension they'd created between the two, but they made it so that Scorpius had a crush on Rose? Really? Hadn't he just spent the whole play being jealous whenever Delphi was around Albus?
And didn't he cry...
And didn't he cry when Albus wouldn't see him? And did they make love eyes at each other during that scene on the stairs? Gah, major disappointment. That and the whole Bellatrix Voldy sex thing. Ugh.
I completely forgot to mention when we were talking about Scorpius and Albus's thing is like how jealous he got
when
Albus told about Delphi. Yeah. Like he got really jealous, like to the point of being like, don't talk about her, stay away from her, like, kind of levels. It was intense.
But that's one of the reasons we were so convinced that they were really going there. Well, I wasn't, because I'm done hoping for anything. But Andrew was, and Danya was, and Kyle was, that because they were setting it up so much for... Like with all the tells that if it had been a boy and a girl, it would have been beyond obvious. You know, he was so jealous of Delphi. He was so jealous of her attentions to her. And it wasn't a suspicion. He was literally just jealous. And he was so, like, he was pining for Albus. And I will say it's probably more on his side than it was on Albus's side. And that sort of does lead into our next question. But Scorpius was in love with Albus. And maybe we're meant to interpret it as platonic love. This is Merlin all over again, guys. But I swear, there was no question that Scorpius was in love with Albus to me. And it sort of does go into a question we have from Yana Grieben-Yuk. She asked how people pronounce her name on Twitter. And there you go. That's how I would pronounce it. Who asks, why didn't Redacted and Redacted, that's Albus and Scorpius, get together? Can you tell that I'm still really bitter? And do the small hints that we got about it mean that Redacted, I'm going to assume that Scorpius, is bi because yes. You know, I answered this too on Twitter. There's absolutely no reason to assume this based on what the text gave us, and knowing what we know, probably not. But we don't have to, like, we don't have to stick to canon. He is 100%, yes. Like, this just goes along with J.K. Rowling adding representation without actually making it clear. Like, I don't know. I feel like he is. I don't know.
I would say,
yeah, I agree. That
if he does genuinely like Rose in that mm-hmm, way, then mm-hmm. yes, I would say that Scorpius is absolutely bisexual, because there's no other way to interpret.
Well, yeah, when you look at the way that he is interacting with Rose and with Albus and with Delphi, who are pretty much like the only like contemporary characters we see him interacting with, it's obvious he has no interest in Delphi whatsoever. He's like, his feelings for Albus are insanely intense, and I would say not. And I mean, it goes beyond
friendship
the way we see it. And his feelings for Rose, it's clearly an adolescent crush that he has on Rose, like based on the two scenes they have together. That's pretty obvious. That's what they're going for, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say yes. I would say, hell yes. Why the hell not? So there. Ningzi has a really good question, which I'll let you tackle, Danya, since you know this better than us.
So Ningzi says, where's a good place to sit? I would say that depending on what kind of money that you have to spend on it, a good place to sit is either going to be, if you want to go in the stalls to be close to the stage, I would recommend that you sit in the first half of the rows in the stalls. So from the front of the stage to about halfway back of the total.
Yeah, not in the very, very back. Because
don't sit in the very, very back, because the balcony, if you get to where like the sort of lip of the balcony starts coming over, then you're going to have a restricted view. And some of what happens does happen in the air. If you're in either the upper circle, which is the first balcony, or the grand circle, which is the second balcony, pretty much anywhere on there was really good.
Well, the thing is, too, that a lot of it is going to be Friday 40, so you probably won't have much of a choice.
Yeah.
But just basically just avoid the top thing, and avoid the bit that's covered by the balcony, so the last like five rows of the bottom, and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I guess that pretty much begins to wrap it up, unless you guys have any final things you do want to say. I feel like we've touched on a lot, but I know there's stuff we probably haven't talked about at all. I'm sorry. I'm so tired. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's so hard to talk about everything, because it's a 5-hour play.
Right. And there's so many things. Like, there was the big shocks. There's the smaller character moments. Takeaway, Scorpius was great. Hermione was great. I thought Harry was great. I thought Ron was okay. I thought everything else was... I guess that's pretty much how to sum it up. Ginny was pretty good, too.
Draco was good.
Draco, of course, fanfic Draco. Never forget fanfic Draco, because he is the best. Yeah, I guess that's everything. So thank you so much for listening. Now, we're going to release this as soon as possible, so it will go out roughly 1 month before the play opens for preview. So, you know, don't listen to this until you have seen the play. I mean, obviously, that's what we're expecting, right?
Clearly, yeah. Wink. We're not trying to be wormtaily or anything.
No, I mean, you're listening to this on July 31st after you've gotten your play. Everything is fine. Everything's good, right? Right? Too late.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed, and let us know. If you have any other questions for us, then let us know. And if they're vague enough, we can answer them on next week's hype. And if they're not, we might answer you privately. You can email us hype@hypeable.com, or you can send us an ask on Tumblr, which is hypeablehype.tumblr.com. If you have, that's me and Kyle are on Hype regularly. If you want to ask Katie or Danya a question, do you want to just give your Twitter accounts briefly?
Sure. I am virtual_Don, so that's D-O-N, on Twitter. So yes, please come and shout at me if you want to.
And I'm Caitlin Awad on Twitter. And if you have anything you want to tell me about Draco, I am more than happy to hear it.
Yes, I think it's we didn't spend enough time on Draco. I feel bad. I just wanted to talk about Draco and Scorpius the whole time.
I just want to talk about Alex Price for another 10 minutes.
What are you saying, Kyle? You're breaking up. No, he's gone. Okay,
he's the cursed child. Kyle is the cursed child.
Kyle is the cursed child. He was Voldemort's son all along. The truth is coming. He's growing wings as we speak. So thank you so much for listening, and thanks for sending in questions. So we hope to see you in the comments, and we hope you listen to next week's episode of Hype. You can also find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. My name is Selena.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Katie.
Kyle is somewhere. He went back in time. Okay, so that's the end. Oh my god. So long, guys. It's almost 3 hours. I can't believe this. This is ridiculous.
Oh my god. I'm sorry. My internet.
Kyle, you missed it.
What?
We ended.
Dang it.